Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it's time for an entertainment review radio show, and the last one I have was with a guitar player by the name of Brad Wilson, a blues guitar player. Well, this guitar player, and Brad was playing for 40 years. Well, this guy I know has been playing over 40 years. He's one of my friends from the old high school days, and you know, we never did go to school together, Craig, but you played in a band called Tyrant years ago with a guy that I went to junior high school with, Craig, Shane Lovelace. So what's your thoughts about going that far back, Craig?
I don't think that far back, usually. But, you know, I don't consider myself an old fart, but I getting a little long in the tooth, I guess. But high school. Yeah, that's right. I think Shane, me and Carrie, rest in peace, Carrie. He unfortunately died recently, the bass player. But he and Shane and the drummer we were already rehearsing somewhere, and we just hooked up. But that's right, we did not actually technically go to the same high school.
No,
but
you
yeah,
were Chris.
That was a good, actually, for the time, for sort of the first real band that was in it. But it was actually a pretty good band, really. I mean, we did lots of Budgie and UFO and like Scorps, The Who, and like pretty heavy AC/DC and pretty heavy stuff, really.
Yeah, I think you were about 17 or 18 years of age then.
Probably
I know that 17. I was around that,
grade
that
11,
time period.
We did community bashes. We had some of those had like 200, 300 people, and once in a while we get sort of a bar band to sort of front us or whatever in the community. I think we did a couple. But we did lots of community bashes. They were usually quite successful. And we toured recently. We toured very briefly.
Well, I'd like to take you back to, you know, like recently you were just in a recording studio, but when I was taking sound engineering courses at Jonathan Sound before I went to Water Street to take a course from Craig Hutch Hutchinson, really, really good engineer, that guy. But we got a chance to go in and basically do a little project while I was taking those classes. So, you know, what have you learned from that time period when you were like knee-high to the grasshopper, right? To being long-eared in the tooth, so to say, in your last studio experience. How did you actually do some of that guitar work? Were you doing overdubs like what we did back in the day?
Oh, God, the learning curve is over that time period and the amount of studio time I've spent over the years. I mean, it's insane what you realize you did not know back then, you know, because we were just pup little kids basically learning, you know. I think I'd only been on the road once but when we did that. But basically it's just like anything, you know. You learn what not to do, what to do. Like as far as overdubs, that's always going to be the case in any studio. But what I did learn is that being in a studio is comparable to, like, when you play live, it's like an actor. They always say, oh, the best thing is being in front of a crowd live on Broadway, right? You know, being on stage. It's the same thing with a musician. I mean, the best is being on stage live, obviously. But it's the same thing with an actor when they do movies, because everything's cut, 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 little pieces here and there, and you do as much as you can in a stretch. But it's sort of the same. It is the same thing. When you're in the studio, it's like a person doing a movie compared to being on stage as an actor. It's sort of the same thing because you go in, you do snippets at a time. But when I record like our latest CD, like when you go in there, like I don't want to do little snippets. Like I want to play as long a stretch, like just go from the beginning of the song to the end of the song. Do the whole lead solo, do this. Like some guys, you know, they'll go, you know, 20 seconds and then stop and then they'll, okay, start there and carry on. Little snippets. I prefer not to do that. I'd like to keep it so it's more of a live feel. And the way I look at it, if you can't get through the song, what the hell are you doing? But that's the difference. But I like to try to have a live feel as much as you can. But,
so basically you did do overdubs and all of that sort of stuff. Now,
yes,
let's get into...
We kept it to a minimum, you know, like we didn't want to just go nuts with it, you know, but you have to do it on occasion. And usually you double
right.
everything. That's obvious.
Right. So moving right along, we're going to go into the side of where you were many, many years ago. Can you say that you have learned a lot to take the roots, like I talked to Brad Wilson about the roots of his playing from the blues? Well, your roots are a lot more different because you're a classically trained guitar player. So do you find that a lot of the scale work that you were doing as a classical guitar player influences maybe your lead solo work that you're doing now?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's that guitar background of classical has always been a huge benefit, because when you go from that kind of technical, a lot of open string chords, lots of, it's hard to explain. But it's such a huge benefit, because whatever you're doing, whether you're doing lead solos, just like when you transfer over to rock and roll, you sort of say to yourself, geez, you know, this is pretty plain and easy, you know, bar chords and so forth. So you automatically, you're sort of reaching for more difficult chords, you're reaching for more interesting lead solos. It just forces you to, I don't know, just be more intricate and more complicated, say, you know, instead of just sticking to the basics. You know. That's sort of a big part of it. You know, just it makes it more interesting. You know, you try to keep it more interesting rather than just sticking with a more basic type of playing.
So
that's
the way that I would like to sort of like explain this maybe is a lot of it has got time signature, as in the length of the note, plus the intricacy of maybe getting into different modes of scales. Is that more along the lines of what it would be like in comparing a classical guitar player to maybe more or less your blues kind of guitar player? How about that analogy?
Oh, yeah. Well, whether it's, like blues is very, you know, basically it's majors, minors. It's very straightforward, more or less. And, like, you see guys like, you know, these real guitar gods, like Ingvar Malmsteen. Now, these guys are everywhere. Like, they're using every form of possible, you know, scale on the planet, on any given 10 seconds of a song, you know what I mean? But blues is more straightforward. It's, like, basically major minor music. And it's just all a part, it's all a, just, plus your personality comes out no matter what you're playing anyway, so... It's just nice to have those options, more scale options, more chord options, more. You just have more to feed from, more to take from your experience and from the different styles of playing that you've done. It just opens up your options more than anything.
Well, when I had the discussion with Brad, okay, and it's funny that you bring up Yngwie Malmsteen, because the next guy that's going to be on the Entertainment Review radio show is a neoclassical kind of guitar player. But you're more influenced by the Rick Emmetts, like the showman of the Rick Emmett kind of idea, or the classical kind of note work involved in like more the hard rock vein of let's say the song that we recorded, Rock Bottom by UFO. You're more influenced by that kind of guitar work, but do you think that the showman side of guitar playing is really becoming lost in today's musical world, Craig?
Absolutely. I think I mentioned it to you before. A lot of it, record and play live later. You can play live, hone your craft, then worry about getting to the studio recording when everything's totally tight, and you hone your craft on stage. So some of that performance side of it's gone by the wayside because, it's just there's not as much time on stage maybe for people, or maybe they just don't care anymore. A lot of guys, just kind of stand there. But as far as influence from people like Rick Emmett, Schenker, even Styx, Priest, Scorps, Randy Rhoads, whoever, I've always been really, really heavy on the picking side of things rather than all left hand, like say Eddie Van Halen. Like, not that it's all there to access, but I've always been more impressed by a real good picker. Because there's a lot of guys, and then they can put the pick down, and they can be a great player with their right hand, which comes from the classical. So, a lot of guys, they put the pick down, and then they kind of don't really have anything to access because they're not used to using their fingers on the right hand. So all that is accessible if you have that background. But I've always been I've been really into the picking side of things. Like, I'm more impressed. Like, I'll see somebody that's not necessarily, not necessarily even have a whammy bar, and it's all about the picking. That's I don't know why, but that's always impressed me more than, the Eddie Van Halen side of things, the hammer and everything. Because once you get that down, it's pretty easy, really. But I don't know.
Well, this was one of the topics of conversation that Brad Wilson and I have was, when your roots come out of the acoustic side of blues playing, you're dealing with a lot of your thumb playing the acoustic instrument as well as your fingers. Do you think that the electric guitar people that are doing the picking of scales are losing that ability in the newer genre of guitar playing, the new guys that are coming up? Are they all just the pick hand with the pick in their fingers?
That's a little more I think it's a little more in the corporate. Like the whole 80s thing, for instance, it was just whammy bar crazy. Like, everybody was just, it was just a certain thing. Like, everybody's just all over the place. Everybody had a whammy bar. Everybody had their hammer or whatever. And it was all, it's hard to explain, like Nuno Betancourt or there was, like I said, Eddie Van Halen. But now it's still there, but it's sort of not as crazy. People are more into, a lot of people playing Les Pauls without the whammy these days, and they're, a lot of these bands, it's all real crazy, just bar chords. I don't know. It's hard to nail it down, but then when you go into the heavy side of music, like whether it's Dream Theater or progressive bands with 17-minute songs and everything, they're just insanely good. There's so many.
Well, let's look at it.
So I'm not saying there's not there's awesome players no matter what you're in. I mean, there's awesome players everywhere. The world's
Let's
good.
Look at it from
and
the change of style of music too, right? Like, you got to look at it from the change of style of even the times, you know? Like, when you think about the 80s, we thought about all the clubs that you were playing across Western Canada. Gone are those days.
Exactly,
you know,
yeah.
so is that going to affect?
Oh, yeah, you'd throw a band together and you'd be playing six nights a week automatically. If you had a good band, you could get out and play six nights a week, every week
exactly,
of the month.
Exactly, but is that going to affect?
You can't do that
anymore. Exactly. Is that going to affect?
I mean, that's back when you were doing top 40 even when you weren't doing, if you weren't doing originals. I was never involved in a band that didn't do originals. But if you're strictly just a top 40 band having fun, I mean, you'd have a job like nothing.
Yeah,
now,
but is that going to affect the performance on stage is my point, Craig. It's like nowadays it's all in pubs. It's all in, gone are the days of the 300-seater clubs.
Exactly. Plus, and the big show, like, you know, we had 40 lights, two spotlights, you know, for instance, in whether it was Lipstick or Paris or whatever the band was in. You know, we had a big show, 5-ton truck full of stuff, movie every Sunday. You know, it was those days. Now you play a small pub and you can do a Friday and a Saturday, and that's about it. And
well,
usually
nowadays you don't even travel around with your own road crews nowadays unless
not
you
really,
are recording.
Now it's kind of like you, and it's very small, like they might have four lights. It's just a different time.
Yeah, it's a different genre.
It's a shame.
So
people aren't getting the experience they used to get. You know, if you're playing all year, year after year in bands, on stage 3 hours a night, 6 days a week, you're going to get pretty damn good over a few years. Even if you already are good or bad, you're still going to be, you know, you're going to get it down. But where are you getting your experience these days? I mean, you can get out and do a couple of showcases or a few one-nighters. It's just harder to play regular, is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah.
It's a shame.
You know, gone are those days, you know. Like, a lot of the guys that I know of are being in duets, acoustic duets most of the time because the big clubs are not around. But let's get into nowadays, amps seem to be getting smaller.
Oh,
back in the day of Van Halen, we were stacking Marshalls to the roof.
Oh, there's still, you know, bands I'm into, they still got the big stacks, believe me.
Oh, yeah, but
I know what you're saying is now it's, you know, guys are as convenient. They'd rather just watch Buck in with a little combo with one speaker and just screw all that, you know.
Well, you know, it's all got to do with the venue that you're playing, right? It's all got to do with that, right? And nowadays, with the modifications that are involved, like you said in the text interview that I did with you, Craig, is that, you know, you use this thing, you use that thing, you use Mesa Boogie. Well, triple rectifiers, when did they come out? They weren't around in the 70s. You were lucky to get a good sounding Marshall in the 70s.
Yeah, it's like I got a Mesa. I love my Stiletto, and I've made Mesa guy since about my first one I got. I just went from Marshall to Hiwa, tried different things. I was always a Marshall guy, but now I will never go away from Boogie. But I know what you're saying, because everything, like, look at PAs, for instance. You go to these shows, and they're about one-third what they used, the size they used to be in the 70s. Everything's compact with twice they're twice as good, but they're, you know, they've shrunk down to nothing. I mean, you listen to something that's really small, and you think, how the hell is that sound coming out of that thing? So everything's very compact now. But on the other hand, there's nothing better than having a big wall of amps behind you. I mean, that's, if you're a metal guy, that's what it's all about. I mean, you're going to stand in front of that stack, about five stacks of Marshalls or whatever. I mean, that's there's nothing like it. Make your pants move, you know.
Right. But the thing is nowadays you practically have got to have that kind of sound in a club at a low volume.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
Gone
like,
are the
like,
days
of the high volume
kind of ticket.
I remember Big Mountain Sound there in Calgary. They years ago, I got my first. This is how much we knew. I got a 100-watt Marshall. I mean, those things. That's no preamp, no. It was just straight out. So that's when you used to turn it around on stage, or you put a board or a blanket in front of it because you couldn't get a good distortion sound unless you cranked the shit out of it. Sorry for my language. But now, you don't have that problem. Like that, those old amps, Like I remember at Big Mountain Sound, the guy just installed one for me, like a preamp, so then you could get that distortion and you could play with it and bring the volume down. And now they're all like
right.
that. You can have a fantastic sound, not a super volume, but you still never really get a super sound without getting those tubes cranked, and it's all about the tubes. And like in the studio, I had this thing so loud, it was just to the nuts, and that's the only way you can really get what you want. You still got to crank.
Right.
But I know what you're
saying. But you look at the development of the guitar. This is part of what Brad and I were talking about. Back in the day when, like Willie Dixon and all of those blues guys were playing Craig, they didn't hardly have any kind of amplifiers. Like, nothing that was like today where there's so much into electronics that these guys were like masters at their own instruments as they were playing the instrument acoustically.
Sorry, go ahead.
How much is it of about your tunes? Like I interview a lot of people on the program, and it isn't them being plugged in when they're writing the song. They're either sitting at a piano or have got an acoustic guitar in their hands writing the song.
Oh yeah. When I know ideas are the real thing and they're really the real thing, they kind of just drop into my lap, and it's almost like they come from somewhere else. And then you know it's real, you know what I mean? And I always have my little recorder handy, and I throw the idea down. And then once I start building the songs and stuff, I'm usually sitting there with an acoustic or an unplugged electric, and I worry about all that once the ideas are honed and then you. Then you worry about all the sound, whatever. But the benefit these days is amazing with the technology and everything. Don't get me wrong, but I know what you're saying. It's not all good.
Well, look at it from the aspect of digital to analog. A lot of your boards now are digital instead of analog. At one time, you were recording to tape. Now you're recording to data.
You had to sit there and physically cut the tape when you edit it.
Yeah.
It's like, I need to take that little piece out. It's like, I remember watching a guy cutting it. That's like so primitive. It shows, we're getting up there. But, Bob has a 120 input 60-channel automated solid-state mixing board. He has all the converters and the Pro Tools. It's a 5.1 surround sound and everything. When you think about that compared to, for instance, when we were kids and sort of our first little studio thing when we did Rock Bottom, when you just compare, it's like night and day,
Yeah, 24-track... a tape machine in comparison to what they're doing in digital today. But if you really go back to the true audio file, Craig, everybody's heading back to vinyl with tube amps to listen to the music anyhow.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of guys out there, and me included. Nothing like putting an album on.
You know, and so...
Call it romantic or whatever, but it's nothing like hearing that needle touch, and you know, it just makes you reminisce a bit, you know. There's nothing like it. And it sounds fine to me.
That's how come a lot of the bands are putting out albums again. It's for that true audio experience. And, you know, when you think about it, I do believe that Mushroom Studios out in Vancouver are still using the old tube setup inside the studio.
I remember Nicky Cruz way back. I never even really think about that those days. But that's right. They did Crying Eyes in Mushroom, I believe. They actually recorded it before I was even in the band. I believe they did it there. It's still there, eh?
Yeah, it's still going. Last I heard, like some of this new stuff, you know, like the 80s brought out the CDs, they brought out the digital, they brought out the compactness of everything. But
well,
when it comes right down to it, when it comes right down to it, the real masters knew how to play with their hands. Look at Jeff Beck. He doesn't use a pick ever. He's using his thumb.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no. You can playing electric without a pick can be great. You can get so much sweet, soft sound, you know. You know, that's what I was saying before, is, you know, it's nice when you, if you don't, if you put the pick down, I mean, it's nice to have that access. Because a lot of guys, they've always had a pick. They're just, and then they kind of put it down. They're like, you're kind of like, well, I don't really play without a pick. Which is, I'm just glad I have that accessibility through that experience with classical. So beneficial.
Well, I'm going to look at it from a perspective here, okay? You know, when you were learning guitar, and your brother was learning guitar, and like you mentioned, him losing interest. What was it that made you want to practice more? What was the thing that kept you wanting to play even an acoustic guitar?
It was just hit me like a lightning bolt. It's all I ever wanted to do. So. It wasn't even an issue of what made me do it. It was just always. I just didn't want to put it down. It was all about the guitar. Yeah.
Okay, so let me word it a little bit differently.
It's a cliche. It was in my blood, right? Like some guys, they tell me a story and they'll say, "Well, I started playing at 15 to get laid." You know, it was nothing like that for me. It was just always there when I was a kid. Like some guys are like, "Oh, I got in a band to get laid," and then they end up getting famous. Like, but that's their initiation. And they'll admit that. They'll say, "Oh, yeah, I just took it up to meet girls," you know, which is fine.
Okay, well, I want an answer that does not involve that, so I'm going to word it a different way. Okay? If you go back to a movie called Crossroads, there's various different crossroads that a musician reaches. Okay? What was that crossroad that you reached that your brother didn't? What?
Well, see, that's you're talking about so young. Like, so, I think if it was him, it just wasn't there for him. It wasn't real. I mean, for me, it was just the real deal. So he was just like, whatever. He just put it down.
So, okay, what was that crossroad with you? You must have achieved something for you to desire to continue on with it. Like, this is the last question. So what is that crossroad? What would you point out to a guitar player that wants to learn but reaches that certain crossroad you reached?
Crossroads isn't really the right word, I don't think, but it's all I can say is if you're not into it 110% and you love it 110%, in my opinion, if you're thinking about it as just a hobby and to have a little fun, that's great. But if you're thinking about it as something you're going to pursue professionally, unless you're full heart and soul into it, don't bother, because it's a tough life. And it was just always like that for me. It was just like there was no other thing I wanted to do, period. Like,
Okay. Cross
was weird. I understand what you're saying, but there was never anything really like that. It was just always there. I don't know. There wasn't like
I could
point out where I thought, okay, well, that's the turning point or anything like that. It was just, if I was about 6 years old, it's just been there, you know.
So to wrap things up, Craig, like we've gone over time, okay? But to wrap things up, okay, you got to be quick about this. Get out what is going to be happening with the next Scale Fighter. What are your plans with Scale Fighter to end the interview?
Oh, thanks for letting me push my project. Scale Fighter Minutes Like Days is, as you know, is out there doing okay. And then Scale Fighter 2 Revision, the pre-production is done, and we'll be putting that out this year with a video and one new member change, which I will be letting out of the cat's bag or out of the bag, and the cat out of the bag sometime soon, at the appropriate time and place. And it's
okay.
Just everything's going onward and upward. Everything's great. I'm very excited about the new CD. The new material I wrote is fantastic, as far as I'm concerned.
Excellent.
It's the exact same vein as Scale Fighter Minutes Like Days. It's true Scale Fighter.
Excellent.
And like I said, you know, go to our website and our Facebook page, and you can get updates on any live performances or anything like that.
Great. So at this time, we usually announce what's coming up a little bit later in the show than it usually is. Like, we've gone overboard. So tomorrow, John Brandenberry and I will be discussing Cuttlefish. And then coming up on Wednesday, I got a country music artist by the name of Morgan Riley that will be on the Yeehaw Show. And then on Saturday, I will be joined by Harold Alfano on a special show dealing with a hike for mental health. And Craig, I want to thank you for being on the show. And that's it.
Okay, thanks, Willie.
Tomorrow.
Take care, bud.
Yep, bye.